Here. No magic today. That looks tasty. Yeah, nothing like a good glass of Windex in the morning. Today we are continuing our series on marriage, and this third lesson is about loving God first, being one of the core values for a healthy marriage. You can look in Proverbs 4:23. We're going to talk about this verse for a bit right at the beginning. Or I can just tell you what it says. It's very simple. Proverbs 4:23 says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." Everything we do and everything we say flows from our heart. It's the source of everything. And so it's important in our marriages and in our families in general for us to be in touch with our hearts. We work a lot on communication. Last week we talked about how our words are the primary way that we show love and respect. But communication between our spouses and with our kids, with our families at large, with our friends, you know, those things flow from our hearts and how we're doing. It's important to learn to communicate from an emotional level. It's important for us to try to get in touch with how am I feeling right now? Because sometimes, like we talked about last week, sometimes we react in a way that even this happens with us. Something will happen and we react and we go, "Whoa, I really overreacted there." Now, we don't say that out loud because we want to come across like we think we reacted completely appropriately. It's usually our spouse that's going, "Whoa, what's up with him? Because I don't know where that came from." I remember this time when we lived in Grand Rapids and our boys were really little. I think school was out or something, but we were together with another family and we had a bunch of kids and we were going to go see a movie. And I know we were concerned that the movie was going to sell out. So the plan was I was going to leave before everybody else and go buy tickets for everybody. And I can't remember what animated cinematic masterpiece we were going to see. But I knew that I felt it was really important that I get there early and buy tickets so this whole slew of kids wouldn't be disappointed. And so I started to leave, and Alex and Austin were going to ride with me, and Alex and I sat in the car for a while, and finally I just got out of the car, and I went back in to see what Austin was doing, and he was still getting ready, doing something, I don't know, maybe trying to get his coat on or something, but he was, you know, Sue said, "He'll be there in just a minute," so I go back out, and I sit in the car, and we wait a little while longer. And I waited to the point that I could bear. And I went back in again. And he said, "I'll be right there." So I said, "Okay." So I go back out and I sit in the car with Alex for a while longer. And I wait and I wait. And finally, I see the door open. And Austin sticks his little round head out and says, "I'm just going to ride with Mom." I throw the car in gear and I back out. I squeal the tires and I start heading down the road. And Alex, who's probably 7 at the time, is sitting in the back. And just a little while down the road, as I go careening through the neighborhood, Alex says, "Dad?" I said, "Yeah?" He said, "I know this is crazy. I know this sounds really weird. But, because I think you're upset at Austin, but I feel like, and I know this is crazy, but I feel like you're mad at me." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." I said, maybe it's that you know that I'm not mad at you, but I'm being mad around you, and so it makes you feel uncomfortable? He said, yeah, it does. I said, would it help you out if your dad just like chilled out a bit? He said, yeah, that would help. I said, okay, I'm sorry. And so, you know, sometimes we're out of touch with how we're feeling, but if we can have other people around us that are more in touch. But you know, I believe all of us as little kids, we're really in touch with how we're feeling. But as adults, we study and we practice, and we finally at some point reach the point where we learn to be out of touch. And we learn to mask things. We learn to stuff our feelings. We learn to think of feelings as enemies. In fact, I think it can be reinforced in church sometimes that we think of emotions as bad things that need to be suppressed. Like if you say, if you're angry, don't say you're angry, because if you're angry, that's one of the worst things you can be. So don't admit it. You know, never mind the fact that you can't help acting angry. So you're just going around acting out, having these behaviors, and you're angry, but you're not admitting it. You're stuffing it because you're righteous. But here's the deal. I think we need to stop seeing emotions as negative things and start seeing them in ourselves and in other people simply as information that's coming out. Anger is a secondary emotion. If you feel angry, you always felt something else first. You either felt fear or hurt or frustration. You felt that first, then you got angry. Now, you may not be aware of it, but that's true. And so if your spouse is angry, you can get on to them for being angry, or you can see this as information that's coming out, and you try to figure out where that's coming from. Or if you feel angry, you can start thinking, okay, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? That's really helpful information to have. Because anger can be destructive to our relationships, right? We all know that. You know, that story about me tearing through the neighborhood, you know, endangering myself and my son and all my neighbors, is going to be one of those things that Alex remembers forever. You know, that's one of the stories he has of the ways that his father scarred him, right? Anger is destructive, but we need to try to get in touch with where the things are coming from. And what I want to talk about expectations today. Because a lot of times when we're angry, it's because we have unmet or disappointed expectations. You know, Jesus said, when Jesus was asked what the greatest command was, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's the greatest command. And I turn over to 1 John chapter 4. Jesus said the greatest command is to love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength. You know, the marriage principle we're going to be talking about, and I think this really will help. If we can get this on straight, it'll help not just our marriages, but our relationships with our kids, with our parents, with everybody, if we can make some progress here. It's something we can all just, you know, work on together. 1 John 4, starting in verse 15, it says, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in him and he in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in him. And then down in in chapter 4, verse 19, it says, we love because he first loved us. So we know and rely on the love God has for us. We've talked about how with God, we are fully known and fully loved. It's what we all want. We want to be fully known and fully loved. And if you believe that that's true with God, that makes an amazing difference in your life. to believe that you are fully known and fully loved. And this says that love doesn't start with us. We're able to love because God loved us first. We love because he loved us first. And so as believers, as people with a relationship with God in Jesus, the place where we're to come from is the fact that I am fully known and fully loved. I have value to God, and God loves me. But sometimes I think we can look to other people, and I think particularly our spouses, and that our sense of identity and well-being and our source of life, our source of love, is that person instead of God. And no matter how amazing your spouse is not amazing enough to be God. What gives us our perspective, our bearing, our identity in life is that we're fully known and fully loved by God. And I'm going to use one of these counselor words. It's called codependency. Anybody ever heard of codependency? You ever seen it acted out, like on stage at church? In terms of what we're talking about today, codependency is when you try to plug in to people, places, or things as your source of life. When you try to plug into something else besides God as your source of life, that becomes a dysfunctional relationship. Some of us may have heard the concept of a love bank. You know, like where you have this account inside you in your heart that's hopefully filled up, hopefully full as it can be, and you might call it a love bank or a love tank. This represents that. This is our heart. And today, instead of a love bank or a love tank, I think I'm going to use the word of the love jug. And we all have a love jug. And this represents it represents your heart. And so everything you do flows from your heart. Above all else, guard your heart. It's the wellspring of life. Everything you do and everything you say flows from your heart, flows from your love jug. And if your love jug is nice and full, you're feeling good and you feel like you got a lot to give. But the problem is there's people all around us that we pour into. And and all of us, we have to pour into our spouse. And this is going to be Sue right here. I grew up a good Church of Christ boy. My parents were teetotalers. We didn't have glasses shaped like this in our house. This is not a Mathis family approved drinking vessel. I've discovered those, you know, later in life. We keep our Windex in those. But, you know, there's things that Sue needs from me in order to, when I pour into her, you know, they say on average, I'm not trying to pigeonhole you or put you in a box, but on average, women use about 20,000 words a day. Men, on average, say about 7,000 words a day. Sue's above average, and I'm below average. But so a part of pouring into Sue is that she needs words from me. One of the challenges is in any given sermon, I use about 3 days of my words. But she's there for me to pour into. You know, and we have to learn each other's love languages. And, you know, some people like acts of service. Some people like quality time. Some people like words of affirmation. And Sue unapologetically says it is no fair that you have to pick one or two or three of those. And so she says, my love language is all those. So when acts of service and words of affirmation and quality time kind of converge into one place, that means I talk to her and do things for her for long periods of time. And that's all it takes. You know, we all have... But we all have things that we feel like we need, right? And so we pour into our spouses, and then we have children. And so we pour into our children, and then I try not to love any one of them more than the others. And there's the children, and then there's work. There's that guy I sat next to it where, ooh, he's needy. There's our in-laws. My father-in-law is like the most low-maintenance person in the world. He just doesn't, you know, I don't have to pour into him a lot. We are, like, we pour into him way beyond what he wants us to. He's just good, you know, which is awesome. And, you know, then you have people in your neighborhood and, you know, all the other people. And see, and then see, here's the problem. Then you're like, you're getting really low. Your love jug is not looking good. And you get frustrated maybe because you think, I'm pouring out and pouring out and pouring out, and when is she going to start pouring back? I'm pouring out and pouring out and pouring out. When is he going to get off his tail and start pouring back? And I'm frustrated because it's not coming back the way I'm pouring out. I'm hurt. Because I thought the deal was we would meet halfway. And that everything I poured out would just get poured right back. And then my love jug would just be happy. It would always be right up here at the top. And you start feeling angry. And it starts taking a toll on your relationship. But see, anger is a secondary emotion. Before you feel angry, you feel fear or hurt. Or frustration. One of the fears is that we start getting into a scarcity mentality. I've been pouring out and pouring out, and look at this. Who's going to take? There's not enough of me to go around. I don't have enough love. I can't serve enough to meet all the needs. And you're looking at how much is left in your love jug, and you feel fearful, and you feel hurt, and you feel frustrated, and you get angry, and your marriage starts going downhill fast. Your relationship with your kids starts going downhill fast. And we think, this is not what I thought I agreed to. I thought we were going to take care of each other. I thought I was going to have an amazing life because my kids would pour back into me as much as I poured into them. I thought my spouse would pour into me just as much as I poured into her or him. And it doesn't seem to be going that way, and now I'm mad. And the fact that I know that anger is a secondary emotion, while maybe true, it's not helpful. Because I'm still mad. But see, the problem is, it says there in 1 John that we know and we rely on the love that God has for us. Here's an important tip. Like, who is responsible for your love jug? Who's responsible for my love jug? Me. I am. I am responsible for getting my love jug filled up by God. See, that's when life works. That's when my relationship with my wife works, when I'm not asking her to be God. That's when my relationship with my kids works, because I'm not asking them to be God. I'm taking responsibility for learning how to know and rely on the love that God has for me, that I am connected with God, the true and only source of life. No matter how awesome your wife or your kids are, they can't be the true and only source of life. But when my spouse is my source of life, what happens, and we've already talked about this a little bit, but this is what happens. When my spouse is my source of life, I blame her as the source of my problems. When my spouse is my source of life instead of God, I blame her as the source of my problems. And then what's going to happen? I get frustrated, I get hurt, I get angry, and I go, you know what? I don't have any more to pour out. I quit serving. I'll serve just as soon as I get a little something back. David, can you do this? I will if you do this. How does that go? That's awesome. Talk about really coming together and bonding. Make everything a transaction, you know? That doesn't work too well. When it doesn't come back how I want, when I want, and the quantity I want, then I get frustrated and the relationship becomes strained and drained of life, and we can't remember what it felt like to have feelings of love because they're getting eclipsed by anger that's come from fear and hurt and frustration. Because our spouses are not the true and only source of life. You want to reconnect. You know, we want connection. You want to reconnect with your spouse? Try serving, try giving, try pouring out with absolutely no expectation of getting anything back. Listen with no expectation of being listened to. Serve with no expectation of being served. You know, unfortunately, our marriages, and all the things that we have to pour into, unfortunately, our marriages sometimes are the first relationship we stop pouring into when we start feeling like resources are scarce. Because he's big people. He can take care of himself. She's big people. She can take care of herself. I've got to give to the kids. I've got to give to the people who report to me at work. I've got to give to the people in the neighborhood because I'm organizing that thing that's got to be awesome. And so I'm pouring into everybody except my spouse because I'm thinking in scarcity mode. Because I have limited resources and I can't give, and so our marriages sometimes are the first to go as our priorities. You know, this series is on marriage, but hopefully this will be helpful to people who aren't married, and hopefully this will be helpful to your relationships beyond your marriage, because sometimes we can look to our kids, as parents, we can look to our kids as the source of life. But when I look to my kids as the source of life, One thing, unfortunately, that can happen is I start using my kids to try to impress other people. Anybody feel that a little bit? When my kids are my source of life, you know, we talk about people trying to live vicariously through their kids. And your kids become the source of life. And what you do is you start trying to impress other people. You ever done this? Somebody just says, "How are your kids doing?" And you say something, and then afterwards you think, "I think I went over the top a little bit there, you know. I mean, he's a great kid. I love him. But I kind of sounded like he was about to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. It was just a Facebook post, you know." But we feel this need, you know, people have got to be really impressed with our kids because we want people to think, hey, successful kids, you know what that means? Successful parents. And they've got to be in the best schools and the best programs and the best camps. And I'm worried because my kid's 7 and usually professional athletes are in the elite camps by the time they're 6 and he's a year behind. And he's got to be awesome. Because if he's not, people might start to suspect that I'm not awesome. And we fall into this trophy parenting or vanity parenting. Where our kids become our source of life and our source of confidence. And they're things to impress other people, but it becomes about us. We can also fall into this faulty input-output theory of parenting that says whatever I pour into my kids, I will get back from them. You know, we have these conversations where Sue and I, you know, in private going, they're just so ungrateful. It's like, yeah, they're kids, you know. Of course, I mean, it's in their job description, they're kids. They have to be ungrateful. They don't want to be ungrateful, but they have to. But we have to pour into our kids. You know, I'm supposed to pour into our kids. We're all supposed to pour into our kids. You know, Deuteronomy 6, right there, the verse that Jesus quoted as being the greatest command, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He goes on to say, these commands, first of all, are to be on your hearts. But then impress them on your children. Talk about them when you lay down, when you get up, when you walk along the road. We are supposed to be pouring into our kids. But I think we have to get away from the fact that we think that we're going to pour into our kids so they'll pour back into us. Our kids are not our source of life. They can be a great source of joy. They can also be a great source of fear and hurt and frustration, which, as we all know now, leads to anger. That's why I'm so angry. Exactly. But our kids are not our source of life. But sometimes we still expect them to pour back. Now, those of you who are parents of young kids right now, you're going, pour back? Are you kidding? Kids don't pour back. I pour and I pour and I pour and I pour and I don't get a thank you. And I keep pouring and I keep pouring and I'm looking for just a spot. I don't need them to come and you know, fall down and thanks to all the things that I do for them. What I want them to do is just leave me alone for a couple minutes. I would like to think that sometime in the next 15 years, I can go to the bathroom without being interrupted. But that seems unrealistic sometimes. I mean, you go in the bathroom, and it's like, peace and quiet. And then from some other part of the house, you hear, Mom! At this point, what you're supposed to do is be very, very quiet. Quiet. Now, Jesus apparently thinks, if you read Matthew 7, that we need to learn how to ask, seek, and knock. But it's obvious when you try to go to the bathroom that your kids have that down. The first thing you do is ask, Mom, be very quiet. Mom, and they're going to give up on asking and they're going to start seeking and you're going to hear little footsteps all through the house. It's of great advantage if you have multiple bathrooms because they just might try the others first. And you're hearing hip footsteps through the house. They're asking and they're seeking. At this point, if you're able at all, reach up and turn off the light. But next is going to come knocking. They're going to be pounding on the door. And if they're really industrious, the next thing you might see the edge of a crowbar come through. And then it's all over. No peace. You know, my mom, bless her heart, she was having babies for 22 years. That means like 40 years of group bathroom sessions. No peace. In fact, I remember one time, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old, and there was a store about a half mile from where we lived. And in those days, in the mid-60s, kids 6 or 7 years old could just walk down to the store. Now, I couldn't. Well, I could walk there. I just never had any money. But Jeff Pittman, my next-door neighbor, could get money sometimes. And I remember going to find out if I could go to the store with Jeff. And I went in and discovered my mom was in the bathroom. And just so you'll understand, I'm the 8th of 9 kids. In our little house, we had one bathroom. With that many people using the house, the bathroom door by far had the most openings and closings of any door, way more than the front door. And so by the time I came along as the 8th child, that doorknob and lock and everything was just worn out. You know, I talked about my dad walking in on me when I was asleep in the bathtub. You think, how did that happen? We had worn that bathroom lock out years before I was born. So I come in with Jeff wanting to know if I can walk to the store. And so I walk in with Jeff with me, and I just open the door, and my mom's sitting on the pot. And I go, Mom, can I go to the store? And before I can get it out, I don't know why she couldn't pay attention to what I was saying. She said, David, close the door. I was like, oh, sorry. Come in, Jeff. You know, so Jeff and I came in, and I was very obedient. I closed the door. I said, now, can I go to the store? If you're thinking, I'm going to keep pouring and pouring into my kids, and then it's going to come back, hopefully that's gone now. Your kids are not going to pour back. But we have to keep pouring into our kids. We've got to understand that our kids are there for us to love and pour into, but they are not there to impress other people. We've got to get out of this trophy parenting, vanity parenting mindset and just say, these are just fellow bearers of the image of God that God has put in my life to pour into. And in order to do that, what I've got to do is take personal responsibility for my love jug and get it filled up from God, because the kids, they ain't filling this up. It's my job to get filled up by God. Here's another one that can be tricky. Sometimes we can look to our parents as a source of life. But when we make our parents the source of life, we end up making decisions based on their thoughts and feelings instead of our own and our spouse's. Not that that would ever like take place in here, but could you imagine someone, a friend of yours in your neighborhood, You know, if a spouse felt like we always do what his parents want us to do and not what I want to do. We always do what her parents want us to do and not, and I'm not taken into consideration. You think, well, my parents are pretty low maintenance. I'm not really that, you know, connected. I don't have to pour into my parents that much. But you might be pouring into them more than you think. A lot of times the way we pour into our parents is either through approval or out of anger. We drive the same car as our parents, and we vote the same as our parents, and we make decisions based on what our parents like. And that's not healthy. Or sometimes it's the opposite. It's out of anger. Because we have unresolved anger issues with our parents, we absolutely vote the opposite of what our parents did. And I drive an SUV, and I feel guilty, but my parents drive a Prius, and so I have no other choice. I've got to drive the opposite car. And I decorate in stark minimalist fashion because my parents are curly country. Fluffy, lacy, kind of, and so I'm going to go the opposite, and they end up controlling us every bit as much or more than if we were trying to be exactly like them. You ever heard this before? Coming from like the mother of a groom, and she's, oh, I don't feel like I'm losing a son, I feel like I'm gaining a daughter. And that's a kind of a interesting or cool sentiment, but here's the truth. Nope. You're actually losing a son. And you know, it's not, the relationship's not cut off, but Genesis 2 says a man will leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and they will become one flesh. There's this healthy distance that sometimes may be easy to achieve, and sometimes it may be difficult to achieve. Sometimes they could live in the same neighborhood with no problems. Other times, you need a couple of rivers between you with a bridge only over one of them. You got to work that out. I'm not giving you a prescription. I'm just saying sometimes we can find ourselves pouring into our parents, trying to gain their approval, or just out of reaction, doing things, you know, and it's not healthy, but no matter how much you try to gain your parents' approval, they are not going to be filling up your love jug. And no matter how much, out of spite and anger, you do the opposite of what your parents want you to do, no matter how much you succeed in doing that, that does nothing to fill up your love jug. God's supposed to do that. So love God first. What is that? What's that about? Here's the deal. God is my source of life, not you. If we can say to our spouses, you know, and in a healthy and loving but non-apologetic way, you know, God's my source of life, not you. Maybe you need to say, I've been looking at you as my source of life, but out of love and respect, you're fired. I'm going to stop holding that over your head. I'm not going to look to you anymore as my source of life. I'm going to go to God, the true and only source of life, to get my love jug filled up. That way I can pour out for you, I can pour out for the kids, I can pour out for anybody without fear, without a scarcity mentality, because I know God has an unlimited supply of love. I am fully known and fully loved, and I can be confident. I don't have to give in to fear or hurt or frustration. We love because God first loved us. We know and rely on the love God has for us. God is the true and only source of life, That's one of the core values we need to latch on to so that we can have a healthy and happy marriage. God bless you.